This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. St. Louis is a city of landmarks. There is, of course, the massive silvery landmark dominating our skyline, the Gateway Arch. But landmarks come in many different forms: historic buildings, churches, warehouses, and schools. Many of these structures have been uninhabited for decades, but people and groups have preserved these buildings because they see something important in them, something that St. Louis can't replace when these landmarks are lost. For much of the last two decades, Andrew Weil has been a key voice in that preservation effort. Late last year, he announced his resignation as executive director of the Landmarks Association of St. Louis. And today, to look back on that long tenure and to discuss the state of preservation in St. Louis, I'm joined by Andrew Weil. Andrew, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
You began working for the Landmarks Association in 2007, but I understand your background was actually in archaeology.
My background is in archaeology, and it's in historic archaeology specifically. So the archaeology of the New World after the arrivals of European and African people. So there was already sort of a connection there in that I was looking at the archaeology of historic buildings and historic settlement. And that type of work is governed by the same legal framework that regulates buildings, the National Register of Historic Places being sort of the benchmark for that type of work. So I was already familiar with the legal framework of things, and I was exhausted after multiple, I don't know how many years of field seasons. And a friend of mine was interning with Landmarks at the time. And she said, you know, you're doing a lot of this original, you know, primary document research for the archaeology work. You'd be really good at the National Register nominations. We're doing a lot of those right now. Maybe you should apply for this job. And I remember asking if it had air conditioning. And she said, yes. So I decided to apply for the job. And I got it. And the last 20 years have been history.
Mm-hmm. Was there a particular building or structure that really brought together that background in archaeology and preservation in an interesting way?
Well, early on in my career with Landmarks Association, there was an issue that arose with Sugarloaf Mound in South St. Louis on the bluffs just north of Carondelet. And that property came up for sale, the short version is. And coming from an archaeology background, you know, obviously, Landmarks Association was founded to be an advocate for historic architecture in St. Louis. But, you know, we think of our historic architecture as 19th century, early 20th century architecture here. But this is a property that goes back 1,000 years. And I argued to my board and that this was indeed the original historic architecture of St. Louis, and this should be a real priority for the organization. It's not an archaeological site. It is, but it's also an architectural site. So that was an easy sell for the organization, and worked really hard. Again, because of my archaeology background, I knew about how different tribes claim what's called cultural patrimony in different areas of the United States. And so when certain classifications of archaeological sites are discovered, one of the first things you do is you reach out to those tribes that claim cultural patrimony and gauge their interest in these findings. And one of the tribes I reached out to was the Osage Nation, and they immediately responded positively and ultimately intervened and purchased the property, which incidentally could have very easily been turned into a quick trip or bulldozed or whatever. The laws regarding archaeological sites in the state of Missouri are frankly not strong enough. But that didn't happen in this case. And we had a really great outcome where the Osage Nation purchased that property and has been maintaining it to a certain degree with some assistance from us and other people on the ground here in St. Louis. But they've now expanded that footprint of that property and seem to be pushing forward with their original goal, which was to open a cultural interpretive center down there and mm-hmm. protect the mound and the site as well.
So if we go back to when you were talking with the board and proposing working on protection of Sugarloaf Mound, Why was it not a hard sell? I mean, was there something sort of in the preservation world that was swaying them in that direction?
I think it was very easy. I think that as soon as I brought it up, the board immediately saw, oh yeah, he's right. This is the original architecture of St. Louis, and it's the last remnant of it. And so while it wasn't on the radar of our founders, these types of resources, they're on our radar now. And I was very, thrilled with the backing that I got, because I had just arrived with the organization. The organization has very clearly defined idea of what it's there to do, and I kind of came walking in and was like, "Well, we've got a mound here. This is actually historic architecture." Mm-hmm. And then the metaphorical light bulb went off, and it worked out really well.
And preservation of Sugarloaf Mound actually got an update just a few months ago. In September, the Osage Nation announced that it had, quote, completed the reacquisition of Sugarloaf Mound, and the Osage Nation said that it is now looking at, quote, short-term and long-term preservation efforts. What does preservation for something like Sugarloaf Mound look like? And how does preservation of buildings, how is it similar or different?
Yeah. Well, there are different reasons for pursuing preservation outcomes. In the case of something like Sugarloaf, that it's purely a cultural, it's us sort of standing up as a society and saying, we're not the first people here. We're not going to be the last people here. There's an incredibly deep history here. And do we want to be the sort of society that embraces those cultural legacies and celebrates them? Or do we want to be the sort of society that pushes them over and builds another quick trip on top of them? And so in some cases, historic preservation is done because it's the right thing to do. It's celebrating our history. And in other cases, it's done, and most frequently, it's done because it's economic development. It's sound policy, particularly in urban areas and in old Main Street downtowns, to reuse these buildings that we have. And the quality of the architecture, the fact that these cities are already brownfields where they have all of the utilities and the streets and all that good stuff, all the infrastructure is in place. So it makes a lot of sense to re-inhabit these spaces that our ancestors walked away from. The quality of the building materials is superior in many cases to what we have today. And it's a great way, people think that it's all about, oh, it's old, it's beautiful, don't tear it down, we just need to keep it. And there's an element of that, but the truth of the matter is that these buildings are really useful and they've got a lot of life left in them, and we can keep them and do all of those great things for our cultural heritage, but also redevelop them into a stronger tax base and a more interesting and vibrant city.
Mm-hmm. Is reuse then, is that very high priority as you approach what to do with an historic edifice?
Absolutely. Reuse is... 99% of the time, reuse is the goal. You have very rarely you have an incredibly important place that can and should be interpreted as a museum, as a teaching type of experience, something wonderful like the Campbell House or the Demonil House or the Field House. But most of the time, the goal is to put the lights back on and get people back into them, because without people, historic buildings are just artifacts. Mm-hmm. It's really about creating places for people and re-inhabiting these spaces.
What are the basics of preservation, Andrew? Like, what is the difference, if we take it to very everyday sort of terms, between something someone might do for an old home that they live in versus or compared to what Landmarks Association would do with an historic building?
Well, rarely do we actually do brick and mortar work, although that's changing. So, but in terms of, I think the root of your question, it goes back to what are called preservation approaches. And the most common one is rehabilitation, which is designed to protect the character-defining features of a building, but really to adapt it for current needs. The idea is, we want to protect, especially the exteriors of the buildings, and maintain the character of the surrounding area. But it's really supposed to be for current generations. So those standards are lower than the standard which is called restoration. which is what's applied to something like the Campbell House, where they'll take the best information that they have, in their case, a whole system of photographs of the building from that time period, and decide we're going to restore to this specific time period. We're going to and that's where we're going to hold it, and it's going to be a museum. So restoration versus rehabilitation, and then there's other gradations. But usually, what's being pursued in St. Louis on places that are not the old courthouse, you know, but on our neighborhood buildings and our downtown buildings, we want to keep them around. We want to put them back on the tax rolls and turn the lights back on. So we pursue rehabilitation approach there.
Before we started the show, you had mentioned the Most Enhanced Awards, and that is an annual award for a building that has
most multiple buildings.
So what do you look for when you are looking for a success story? And can you provide a specific example from the past few years?
Oh, you're going to get me in trouble because I can't pick one. We've been doing this for 31 years and I've been around for 20 of them. But it will be, the show will be going on, I'm sure, without me. So what we do is every year around this time of year, we send out solicitations, across St. Louis and the region, really. And now that the award's been around for so long, people know about it and they expect it. But it's for excellence in historic rehabilitation, but really in adaptive reuse and creativity, taking on challenging projects, diversity of project types, a diversity of budgets, a diversity of development entities, a geographic diversity around the city and the region to an extent. Those are all factors that the committee considers in choosing those. But every year we choose around 12 or 13 or so, and we have a big ceremony in May, which is really interesting. I probably shouldn't say this, but I call it building porn, basically. It's these horrific pictures of these buildings before rehabilitation. And then you come around and it's like, oh my God, the transformation is just absolutely stunning. And it's a great event.
Mm-hmm. And an example maybe of one time? Yeah.
So I would say, some of the ones, the great ones, I mean, the old courthouse last year underwent a massive, massive rehabilitation. So it can be high profile buildings like that, or it can be neighborhood buildings. Harris Stowe just redid and won an award last year for their entrepreneurship center at the corner of Compton and Olive,
right
around the corner.
Yes, we've talked about it
on the show. Yeah, so that's an example of, it's this building that people have been driving by for decades. It's not really doing anything for anything. And Harris Stowe came along and made a great new use out of it. Mm-hmm. So that's just one that pops to the head because it's close.
Yeah. We're talking with Andrew Weil, the former executive director of the Landmarks Association of St. Louis. Weil spent nearly 20 years in that position. He resigned at the start of this year. I want to talk about something that is a little bit less positive, and that is a challenge that is facing preservationists here in St. Louis, and that's fire. And every year, fires destroy historic buildings, but it's especially devastating to churches. Andrew, what has shaped your understanding of that kind of fire here in the St. Louis area?
Well, I would say that fire, which is fire flows from vacancy. Fire is one of the problems that we end up with when we have vacant buildings that are improperly secured or not secured at all. And so every winter, in particular, we lose large vacant buildings. And, unfortunately, a lot of them are churches. When half of the city of St. Louis's population walked away from the city in the second half of the 20th century, they left behind a lot of buildings, and they left behind a lot of large churches. And churches are notoriously difficult to repurpose. If you don't have a congregation for it, they're difficult to turn in. They have been turned successfully into housing and workspaces, communal workspaces and things like that, offices. But generally, they're difficult to repurpose, and so they end up languishing. And frequently, also, they're owned by nonprofit organizations, which in itself is not a bad thing at all. But nonprofit organizations don't pay taxes, and so when they go defunct and they own buildings and they're not using those buildings for any kind of purposes, they have a tendency to sort of just sail along and nobody's checking on them, because when it's a regular private individual, they don't pay taxes for a while. The city notices and initiates a conversation. What's going on with this building? Nonprofit organizations don't. So that's back to say that fire is a continuing problem. It tends to impact large unoccupied buildings that are improperly secured. Sometimes they're not secured because the ownership entity hasn't been a functioning ownership entity in years, and the city doesn't know about it because it's tax exempt. But yeah, I mean, last winter we lost the Freedon's Church up in Hyde Park, and we lost Quinn Chapel down in Carondelet within a month or so of each other. And then this year we lost Crundon Martin already, which burned now for the second time. And the Board of Aldermen has made some steps last year. They passed some board bills, and it's 169 through 171, something like that, that increased penalties for vacant buildings unsecured. Good things, but they have to be enforced. They have to be enforced. And I don't know that those new laws and the higher fines and things like that for vacant building unsecured or for demolition without a permit, I don't know that those have been brought to bear yet.
Mm-hmm. Going back to what took you or what brought you to this archaeology to preservation, you'd mentioned National Registry, and one of the key roles of the Landmarks Association is to get a building declared as an official, that is, historic landmark, and that takes a very lengthy and detailed application.
Yeah.
This National Register of Historic Places, St. Louis City has about 14,000 entries. Is that right?
My estimate of the number of buildings that Landmarks Association has listed in St. Louis is about 14,000.
Wow.
And that includes historic districts, which might have, you know, a big one might have 1,200 or 1,300 properties in it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was a strategic priority of the organization that was adopted in the late 80s and 90s because of changes to the tax code that created the Historic Rehabilitation Tax Credit Program. And the National Register is a prerequisite for being eligible for that. So the organization made a concerted effort to, and an ongoing effort, to list as many buildings as possible in the National Register so that they would be eligible for these tax incentives for rehabilitating the properties.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been an absolutely incredible economic development tool for the state of Missouri, that tax credit program. Probably the most effective economic development tool that we have in terms of the billions of dollars of private investment that it's leveraged for St. Louis City alone, not counting outstate small towns, main streets all over the state and Kansas City. So we tried to do that and continue to try to do that because it offers some protections at the local level from arbitrary demolition, and because it provides incentives for rehabbing that have been enormously successful.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that you have been doing since you stepped away from your role at Landmarks Association is doing some writing. You're working on a book. Tell us about Fortified St. Louis.
Yeah, well, so I've been working as the publisher of the Landmarks Letter, the editor of the Landmarks Letter, for a long time. I do a lot of writing. Something that always piqued my interest has been military history. I worked with the National Park Service out at Monocacy National Battlefield in Frederick, Maryland. I worked as a principal investigator on the archaeological investigations of Fort Zumwalt, which was used as a War of 1812 period house fort. So I'm interested in military history, and that's a hole in the body of research on the city of St. Louis. But I think importantly, it's a sort of a regional approach, but I'm beginning with Cahokia and East St. Louis and the palisades that surrounded those properties, and sort of the architecture of those palisades and the context in which they were created, and then moving on to the colonial period fortifications, the War of 1812 period fortifications, and then finally culminating with the very sophisticated Civil War fortifications of the city.
And as we wrap in the last minute or so, Andrew, I mean, clearly you've spent a lot of time on this work pertaining to preservation with buildings. There's this connection now with the book that you're writing to your archaeological sort of roots, as it were. Why is historic preservation something that is important for St. Louis?
Well, to get down to the nuts and bolts of it, there are a lot of academic reasons why it's important, but I really think that it is, and that our historic buildings and our historic neighborhoods are an incredible economic resource and something that we have that no other city has. It's unique to our community, and it's unique in the region, and it's an asset that we can and should be capitalizing upon more. Mm-hmm.
We look forward to seeing the book. Keep in touch with us about that.
Thank you. Yeah, it'll be out in 2028 is when my manuscript's due. Thank you.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.